Columbia Heights.
Oh, you're first.
Down the road from me.
Yep. Not too far.
Yep. I live in the neighborhood. I'm over on 27th and Fillmore, so. So you've been coming to Holden for a lot, many years?
No, this is our first time we made.
Oh, my gosh. So you've had plans that were thwarted other years?
No, I know the wilderness communities a lot of time.
Oh, sure.
Talking about it, you see, listen.
Yeah.
At that time, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a part of the desert.
Yep. Yeah. It was a shift a couple of years ago. So, well, I'll just get started, and there might be some people that go through. Basically, a deaconess is a woman who is consecrated by the church for ministry. It's part of, we're part of a community, so a lot of people will kind of put a puzzled look on and say, you mean like a Lutheran nun? And the answer is, yeah, kind of. Back up until about the 1960s, women who entered the community, who then got married, left the community. So we'll talk a little bit about some of that as well. We're professionally trained, which means we've got some sort of a profession, either nursing or teaching was the historic kind of professions that we did, but there's a lot more now. But our particular community also has a requirement for a theological degree, a two-year master's, usually at a seminary. In general, though, a deaconess is part of a worldwide movement that attempts to bridge the church to the world. So attempts to bring the face of the church out into the world, serving people, and then reinterpreting the needs of the world back into the church. So as a bridge, as I tell some of the stories, you'll see that's a lot about that prayer that's attributed to Saint Francis about all preach the gospel always, if necessary, use words. So that's diaconia, is that service model. In the ELCA, we have four rosters. We have pastors, of course, and that's been men and women it's been women included since about 1972. And then we have three other, what used to be called lay rosters, but now are being called word and service rosters. The associates in ministry are commissioned men and women, usually in somehow within the congregation's life. So if the congregation has a church school, there'll be a principal or a teacher or a business administrator for the congregation or the parish administrator, that kind of thing. Diaconal ministers is a roster of men and women that was started in 1992, so that's about 4 years after the beginning of the ELCA, after they did a study. And diaconal ministers are very similar to deaconesses in that they have a diaconal call of service, typically outside the confines of the programmatic parish life, although not always, and it's men and women. And then the deaconess community, which is what I'm a part of, it has some historic roots that go back, even predating the Augustana Synod, but it's women only. And there's a few other things. A lot of people will get confused and say, oh, do you know Alice this or Lori that? And usually they're thinking of an LDA deaconess, a Lutheran Deaconess Association. That's another community, so you could think of it like two different Benedictine communities in the Roman Catholic Church. Yes, we're both deaconesses, but we come from different communities. The LDA community has historic roots in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They were originally the deaconess mother house and training in Fort Wayne, Indiana, then it moved in 1943 to Valparaiso. And then as the changes happened in the 70s with the LCMS and with some of the shifting and merging in the other Lutheran bodies, what they discerned was that they were really called to serve more than just Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregations and organizations. And so they disconnected officially from the LCMS, even though they still have their main training at Valpo, and even Valpo is not as tightly connected to LCMS as it used to be. They wanted to be able to serve inter-Lutheran in the United States, so that was That's the difference between those. We know a lot of the same people, but it's two different communities. For the last 150 years or so, deaconess training in the United States had traditionally been done in combination with an institute, a college or a university of higher learning and a mother house, which may bring to mind the concept of a convent or a monastery. Hey, come on in. We're getting into the deep, dark history of the deaconess community. Ooh.
Is this for the
are you looking for
stories of the minor?
Nope. That's at 8:30.
Well, that's at 8:30.
Yeah.
I think it is in here, though.
I think it will be in here, but I think it's at 8:30. You are dismissed. Don't worry. I won't feel bad. run away. It was less like a convent than a Lutheran family kind of model. In fact, there's a lot of stories in the Minneapolis Mother House, which was very focused on nursing training, about the socials that they would have between the deaconess mother house, people there, and the men that were at the Augsburg Seminary, so that they could match up. You didn't want to go out on first call without being married. And a Lutheran deaconess was a good match. Fast forward to now, and the deaconess candidacy in the ELCA is very similar to the candidacy process that the other word and service rosters go through. So there's still three steps of entrance, endorsement, and approval, which is the same three steps that the pastors go through. There's a synodical candidacy panel. You have to write all these essays that, you know, they questions, you have psychological interviews, all that same stuff. But in addition and concurrent with those three steps, there are steps to enter the community as well. Because the historic model was that you would spend some time living at the mother house in formation. That's shifted a little bit, and I'll get into that more in a second. But entrance is still the same. The middle step, instead of endorsement, well, in addition to endorsement, is called investiture. And that's where a woman who has passed that step then is called sister and is made a part of the community, can vote, for instance, some of that governance kinds of stuff. And then finally, approval. It gets complicated because the synodical panel can't really endorse or approve if the deaconess panel doesn't, right? Because the synodical panel can't say, no, you're going to be in the deaconess community, because the deaconess community has authority on that. The deaconess community could say, we'll take you into the community, but your synodical panel could disallow or reject you, and then you could be a member of the community but not eligible for being called in the ELCA and on the roster. That hasn't happened recently, but it's a possibility. And then the big thing is that most bishops, congregations, pastors, and synod offices really don't know anything about the process. They don't remember that it exists. If they know anything about the other three rosters, they may know something about the associates in ministry, and they may be able to say something along the lines of, oh, you're like the diaconal ministers, because of the word that's very similar. But the diaconal ministry roster doesn't have a co-candidacy process. They just have the one process. So we're kind of an unknown group. Some of that is understandable given our size. Some of it is a little frustrating to some of the women who are coming in, to be honest. I'm going to skip over most of the history of diaconate. But if you are one of these people or know somebody that's really super interested in history of the church kind of stuff, we sponsor a January elective course that we pay for people to be able to be at. This year it's going to be at Luther Seminary. And it's taught by Susan McCarver, who is a professor of church history at Southern Seminary, and by Dr. Dirk Lang, who is an associate professor of worship at Luther Seminary. And we use it as one of our formation events, but it's really interesting for a mixed group to be there, for pastors or people still discerning what their call might be. So I'm going to leave these in the rack at the hotel, but I don't know, if you want to look at them, you're welcome to it. The part that gets people kind of confused, I guess, is that, you know, at the Reformation, Martin Luther and Katie Luther, the big thing was grace, not works, right? And so up until this moment in history, what had developed from the diaconate, from the very beginning of the church, we had diaconal, a split or a division of labor, if you will, between those that were called to preach and oversee the sacraments, and those who were called to serve the community. Stephen is often considered to be the first deacon, for instance. When we get to Luther, what had happened was that those communities of people serving the poor had withdrawn into some, and what had developed was this kind of concept that, oh, those that are called into the monastery or the convent are higher level Christians. There was this order, this pecking order. You had the Pope and the bishops and the, you know, cardinals and the priests, and then the monks and the nuns. And they did the work of the church, off in their little enclaves or their former palaces. And then all the rest of us were down here swimming around, and we would come and observe the sacrament. We would come, and so he abolished that. There was no higher or lower Christians anymore. And it worked, really, what happened. Because of this new understanding of Christian vocation, that everyone, the shoemaker is called to be a shoemaker, that's a vocation. What happened is that the monasteries and convents started to empty. This organized form of charity and ministry got disrupted, and what one of the results was that this diaconal role started to kind of fade in the Reformed or the Protestant churches. There was a much less focus on that for a good number of years. So what we ended up with was, you know, the clergy, the ordained role, still being very identifiable and understood, and then everybody else. So it was equalized in that sense, even though it could be argued, I think, that there was still some concept of this being a higher calling to be a pastor. And there was no official role for women then, because women could not be called to be a pastor in most of the Protestant churches up until the United States, really. We trace our history to a guy in Germany in 1836, a guy named Theodor Fliedner, and this is a picture of him, and his wife began a ministry to women in Kaiserswerth, Germany. And what they did was they took women who were no longer associated with either their father's or their husband's household. So typically they had lost quite a lot in reputation. Many of them were prostitutes and other petty criminals, shop workers, if they could get that legitimate of a job. But they were women of ill repute. And they were not ever going to be able to fix that in the society by themselves. He took a bunch of those women, they were in prison, some of them, debtor's prison, and taught them nursing and teaching. And he opened a big a mother house as well as a hospital, an orphanage, which is what they called, orphanage, and a nursing home, essentially, for elder care. And these women began to serve that area of Germany, and this caught on like wildfire. It was one of those kind of tipping points in society, because what happened was a woman named Florence Nightingale came and learned nursing at the Kaiserswerth Center, and this also went crazy fast over into the Scandinavian countries. And so what you see very quickly in the early 1800s is this, it starts for the Lutherans here, but almost explodes into the Scandinavian countries and into all the other denominations, the Reformed churches, the Methodist church in England, the Presbyterian as well, and then goes from Europe quickly into the Americas. In Pittsburgh in 1846, so again, this is only within 10 years, William Passavant visits the Fliedners in Germany and says, this is a great idea, can you send me some deaconesses? He had started an infirmary in Pittsburgh, and these women were just the ticket for hope, for kind of running the place and taking care of the people. It's now Passavant Hospital and still stands, and still is one of the big hospital chains in Pittsburgh. Sister Louise Marthen, who was German in heritage, but she was American by birth, was the first consecrated deaconess in the United States in 1850. And then just for a bit of reference, I was reading this that I bought at the bookstore. This is a brief history. Do you know Joan Chittister? Are you familiar with Joan Chittister? She's a Benedictine nun from Erie, Pennsylvania. And she's kind of well known in the peace and justice kind of rabble-rouser kind of thing. The Benedictine community in Erie, Pennsylvania came over from Einstadt, Germany in 1856. So that's the first record of this Benedictine community being planted in the United States. The Lutherans were first.
Yeah.
Again, almost at the same time, a few years later, in Philadelphia now, so a little bit further east from Pittsburgh, John Lankenau asked Fliedner to send 7 more women over because he wanted them to take over the hospital that was there in Philadelphia. And that is now, there's a convalescent home, they started a school for girls as well as some other thing, and they built another mother house for these women. And every time they went and started a hospital, they also started a training program. So they would bring women in to teach them not only the spiritual care, but also the nursing or the teaching skills that they needed to do this ministry. So we've got Pittsburgh, we've got Philadelphia. There was also a group in Baltimore just about that same time in 1889. So if we go back, what was this? 1884 was Philadelphia. 5 years later, the General Synod of the Lutheran Church in the USA. And now I think this was more of the Scandinavian branch. The others were the German Lutherans, and these are more, I think, the Swedish Lutherans in Baltimore. I'm not exactly 100% sure. But they had a big meeting, and they created what they called a Board of Deaconess Work. And they designated deaconesses as persons holding an, quote, office in the church. So this is the first time that language was used in the United States. As far as an office, you know, like you have the office of the pastor. This action was the first for the Lutheran worldwide, I guess. The mother house in Baltimore opened and in 1895, so we're all still before the beginning of the last century. And they, again, included a nursing home, a kindergarten, an orphanage, and they sent women, as did these other mother houses, kind of all over the world and all over the United States. In fact, one of the women that they brought, and this is why I think the Baltimore house has Scandinavian roots, because one of the women that they brought was Elizabeth Fettet, and she was trained in Norway. She came over to the United States with 3 or 4 other women. And very quickly after she arrived in Baltimore, she went on vacation to Minneapolis. And in 1888, there was a General Council of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in North America, and that's primarily a Norwegian, the Norwegian Free Church, essentially. She was there. They had a nice little conversation with her, and they wanted some guy that had a big house on Hennepin Avenue, said, well, you can start a hospital here. And she was like, she was on vacation. It was like she came out to the wilderness of Minneapolis. And I got to go back. She was at the time, she'd been sent from Baltimore to Brooklyn. So she went back, came back with 4 women. They started this hospital. She went back to Baltimore while they ran it. She came back the next year, and it had sort of fizzled. And then George Sveadrup, who was the president of and founder of Oxford College, his wife, again, Norwegian heritage, she had been trained as a deaconess in Norway. And so she and Elizabeth and the rest of these 4 or 5 women set up a new board and got fiscally on its feet. This became Lutheran Deaconess Hospital in Minneapolis, and it continued training women in nursing until 1987, when it was finally absorbed by the Fairview Hospital System, right? Sister Anna Berglund, this is a picture of her at a groundbreaking. when they expanded one of the times, because they, she did several building projects. She was the director, she ran that mother house as well as the training program until she retired, and she, in the early 70s, not very long before she died, and she was the last remaining, she was the last deaconess from the Minneapolis mother house in 1979 is when she died. But I also found a picture of Sister Marjorie Axelrod. This is a picture of her from the Augustana Synod's centennial anniversary book. They published a big book, Our Church. It's got all kinds of pictures and from the church all over the United States of the Augustana Synod. And this is a picture of her. She served at Mount Olivet Church, and there were several other sisters that are still alive in the community, they're retired now, who served at Mount Olivet as well. So there was a cluster of, there was a mother house in Minneapolis. Although it never got very big, because, but, you know, we're also competing with some changes in the culture, right? Where when this started, women couldn't have their own property, their own money, really. They needed to take direction from somebody else. They needed to be supervised, sort of, somehow. Soon, you know, through World War II, women were now, they could have a, they didn't have to get married in order to be respectable. So women would come in and get the training but not stay as a deaconess. So we trained a lot of women as nurses, but they didn't stay and become a deaconess. One other hub of this deaconess stuff was in Omaha. Again, this about the same time, 1890, Fogelstrom. And this is now, what is it called? It's the biggest hospital down there in Omaha, Emmanuel something. It says Emmanuel Deaconess Institute. That became under control of Augustana Synod. And this is where some of that conversation between, this is where it started to be different from the Lutheran Deaconess Association, where this became, this branch of diaconia and deaconesses was more closely tied to the infrastructure of the national, of the synodical church. So what that meant was is that there was more recognition maybe of the ministry of these women, but what it also meant was that as the theologians and the pastors discussed and argued perhaps and merged and all, you know, discontinued their relationships about theological matters, they didn't spend as much time talking about diaconal ministry, because they were too busy talking about whether we agreed on whether Jesus spoke Norwegian or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so we have a history of merging. The church merger that birthed the Lutheran Church in America, so that's where the Augustana Church became part of the LCA in 1962, also seemed like it was good timing to merge the Philadelphia and Baltimore communities. So they merged and they bought a house together outside of Philadelphia in Gladwin, Pennsylvania. They were actually gifted this big, huge, gigantic mansion. And then in 66, the deaconesses in Omaha joined this deaconess community in the LCA. So they didn't move necessarily, but they joined because they were working in that Emmanuel Hospital. The deaconesses in Minnesota also joined were part of the LCA, but again, they didn't move and shut down operations and actually physically move, but they became part of it. In 1988, when the ELCA was formed, this all went into it as part of what was going on with that merger. So in addition to the church professionals and the associates in ministries, you know, you had six or seven different small, not just ALC and LCA, there was several other little synods that were part of this merger into the ELCA. And each one of them had some sort of a church professional organization, and then there was this deaconess community in the LCA. So what the ELCA did is they said, all right, we're going to study this for a little while. So everything got frozen. No new aims or church professionals or anything like that, and no new deaconesses until we figure this out. And what happened was they studied it until 1992, when they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take all the people that were in the church professionals and the associates in ministry, and there was a third one that they called. We're going to put those all in the pot called associates in ministry. And they're going to, we got that. The deaconess roster, there had been some talk about whether they were going to dissolve the community. They decided not to dissolve the community. Instead, what they did was then they started the diaconal ministry roster, which is men and women. So that's why there's that. And we continue to function under the same organizational chart, which has changed, you know, as we know, in the last couple of years, maybe. And we're under the congregational and synodical ministry unit of the ELCA. Then the other big thing that happened a few years after that was that in 1996, we decided that this big, giant, beautiful mansion that we had been gifted in whatever it was, we decided to sell it, partly because it no longer really helped our ministry, partly because it needed a lot of infrastructure updating that was just, it was so expensive to maintain. It's what this huge home.
Is this a picture of that?
No, that's the Lutheran Center. I couldn't get a picture of it. They were all protected, and I didn't, for whatever reason, get to the office. But in 2002, we sold that home in Gladwin, Pennsylvania, and moved our offices to the Lutheran Center in Chicago, which is what a picture of that is. Now, the blessing in all that, it stirs up some turmoil. It's like Holden. We have Holden. We know we're in community here when we're at Holden. We might even stay in community when we go out from Holden, but we have that connecting piece of a geographic location. What we've spent the last 10 years discerning and imagining and wondering with each other is, without a mother house, how are we community? Without a place that we go back to, what does that mean for community? And we're figuring it out, but one of the things that we have for sure figured out is that we are not going to build another house. We're not going to have another center that serves mostly us, because what we've done in the last, 10 years is been able to take that money that we received for the sale of the house, and we've been able to gift it. So we have an endowment fund. Every year we tithe the increase in that fund to the ELCA and ELCIC, which are the two church bodies we serve, and then we take the rest of a percentage of that increase, and we give it out in ministry grants. Last year, we gave out, no, this year, 2012, we funded $173 of grants. $173,000 in grants. A couple of years ago, before the big crash, the most recent unpleasantness, it was $250,000 in ministry grants. So, again, I have brochures if you have ministries. These are all over the United States and Canada. There's a process for applying. It's not just Sister Becky saying, hey, I need somebody to fund my pet project. These are cutting-edge ministries for people in need, and creative ministries for congregations that are really trying to do something new in the world. So, some stats. This year, as of 2012, we have 75 deaconesses in the community, which is why you probably haven't heard of us, because we're the smallest roster. 43 of us are actively in call or in candidacy. 27 are retired or disabled on disability. We are in 22 different states. There's a chunk of us in Minneapolis. There's like four or five of us now. They used to be a little bit bigger. There's a lot of on the eastern seaboard, you know, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, that area up in New England, up in there. And there's a few out here on the West Coast. There's a couple women in Washington. Sister Elizabeth is retired now, but she served a big congregation in downtown Seattle for a while. And there are five awaiting call, which brings me to this, calling deacons. A lot of people say, well, this sounds, are you familiar with Lutheran Services in America? It's a professional organization that helps the social ministry nonprofits that are rooted in the Lutheran tradition. So lots of Lutheran social services around the country, or a lot of these past event nursing homes or hospitals and things like that. These people come, it's kind of leadership training and things like that. And did a presentation for them, and they're like, well, we would hire you. How do we find you? So this is developed. We have, I'm going to skip ahead here. We have women serving right now in functions as pastoral care and faith formation within congregations as music ministers, in missions and outreach as health professionals and chaplains, as IT information specialists, spiritual directors, in synod offices and congregational administration as educators and working with immigrants and children and the aging. So, and there's always women, we've got, I'm not even sure the five women that are in candidacy right now, what their particular calls are. But the idea now is to embrace a wider swath of ministry. So while, like the Benedictines or several of the other Catholic sister women's religious, the focus originally had been health, you know, nursing and teaching of children, it's really broadened out to include things like accounting and lawyers. You know, it wouldn't necessarily be that you would become a deaconess and be a mergers and acquisitions lawyer. You'd probably, which is not what Kyle does, but you'd probably be doing law more on the fringes of societies. You know, doing something with immigration or with family law or something like that, supporting people. But it's a possibility where it wasn't before. So that's a good thing. Back. So the whole idea of the community is to support and develop skilled Lutheran women. And to serve. Thanks. Yeah, good. Any questions pressing? You can catch me later, but.
Sure. Not immediately.
Not immediately. Okay.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Kyle, for coming by.
But I just, we have Stephen ministers in our church.
Yeah.
What is, I mean, I know what that is.
Sure.
Is that connected with your group?
It's not. The Stephen ministry program actually comes out of.
Yeah, kind of how it was the guy that started the Stephen ministry.
Yeah.
Who it is?
Kenneth Hauk.
And but not even Lutheran.
No, it's not a Lutheran.
But it is diaconal, so that is that's where you're seeing the similarity. It is diaconal and it's relational. Stephen Ministry is, I think several of the sisters actually are involved in it in their home settings. You know, because it's enabling the congregation, the people, to serve each other. You know, to serve one another, right?
Yeah. Christian caregiving is basically what its focus is.
Yeah. Right. But it's not a ministry of the, it's not something we invented. Yeah, but it is diakonia. You're exactly right. It's a diaconal work. So.
And Lutheran Social Service is strong in Minneapolis and has many avenues there with their new setups. And, I knew two elderly deaconesses back in 1960 or so. I lived with another nurse in an apartment above an old house where these two elderly deaconesses lived.
Do you remember their names?
And I think one of them started or had to do with being a director of nurses at Fairview Hospital way back in 1924.
But it wasn't Sister Anna Thurgland.
I don't think so.
It was her predecessor, probably. You're in a test.
Don't have their names.
Well, and Sister Hulda, who was also, I think she was also part of that Fairview nursing group. She just died a year and a half or so ago. She was at Augustana Home. And Sister Ruth Harper was another deaconess of our community that served as a faith formation, Sunday school superintendent at Mount Olivet. So, you know, like this Marjorie, I think Sister Ruth came after Sister Marjorie was done. So, yeah, there's a good tradition of that in Minneapolis.
I'm a graduate of Fairview Hospital School of Nursing in 1950.
Oh, so you went through did you go do the capping thing and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we knew student nurses that were at Dizzy's and Swedish.
Yeah.
And other nurses.
Yeah, yeah. There was a close connection between the Deaconess Hospital training and Augsburg.
Yes.
They got a lot of their pre-med, their sciences
yes.
done at Augsburg.
Yes.
And their other generals, kind of. And that's where I was in, well, I was actually introduced to it because I was born at Deaconess Hospital. But when I was growing up, I was at Diamond Lake and had a few people that were, you know, a few years ahead of me that were going through the nursing program at Deaconess. And so, yeah.
Where was that, the Deaconess Hospital, where was it?
It was on 24th and... kind of down there, but and then it moved down to where Riverside is. So it was next then when it, after it merged with Swedish and Deaconess and Swedish, and they moved all of it down to where Fairview Riverside is now. But it was Riverside, and that had been Deaconess, and then there was St. Mary's.
Right. St. Mary's were back to back.
They were back to back.
And Deaconess
yep.
was really over in the 44th and something.
Kind of over in the Seward neighborhood. Kind of
yeah,
sort of.
Yes.
So across Riverside. You know where we went to look at those fireplaces? Kind of over there.
So not near Portland or Park.
No. No, the original hospital was on Hennepin Avenue near downtown, over in the Kenwood neighborhood. But that house doesn't even exist anymore. That's where the freeway is now.
Yeah. And Swedish and St.
Barnabas?
Something were all taken up by what used to be the old general hospital.
Oh, right, so
the
big county hospital downtown.
HCMC.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
That's where Swedish Hospital in St. Barnabas was.
Oh, they used to be down there.
Mm-hmm.
In
so
the area.
A couple of those
buildings.
Older buildings down there, there's one of them at least that still has the old building with the carved in or the cement.
The old nurses down on Swedish is maybe a care center.
Yeah, rehab or something.
Yeah, and I'm not real familiar with what they do. I should know.
Yeah. So you worked for Fairview.
Yes, I graduated from Fairview. I worked at the university and got my degree, and I worked there in the psychiatric nursing for about 6 years.
Oh.
And then Fairview, Riverside, set up their psychiatric unit.
For how long?
59 to 65.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And that was at currently now where Riverside is?
Fairview Riverside is huge now. It's been added to and they've taken over all of St. Mary's. They also now built a huge Amplatz Children's Hospital.
So
the
whole area in Augsburg is still there, but they've changed some things too.
Yeah. Well, we were just down there. Who were we visiting over there? Oh, it was for Tom's cardiac. My son.
How old were you there? Well, you were there.
Yeah, I did my CPE at the university side, but I was over at the Fairview side, or the Riverside.
The Fairview bought the university.
Yeah.
I never in my wildest dreams thought that.
I know, isn't that crazy? So, anyway, that's the deaconess story. Ta-da!
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that freeze from 88 to 92 kind of put a damper on things. You know, it's hard to re-gear up, you know, and start to take candidates again. I think for those 4 years, when everything, you know, we say, sorry, we can't take any candidates, it's hard to come back from that. So. Alrighty.
I'm still trying to figure out.
Well, thank you for
someone else for watching this.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna have so many other opportunities.
Right.
To do.
Today,
yeah.
Yes.
Not too many want to commit to that.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that in our church, it's really. You know, it's hard to get a job unless you're a pastor, even if it's a diaconal kind of job.
Yeah.
So that's the grim reality of it.
That's true.
Is that you know, people don't know, and they don't want to call a deaconess; they want to call another pastor. So.
Yep. Our church is no smaller than it was. We're trying to get it out into the community and serve more.